cricket. It's like a little.
It's like
cricket.
A flying cricket, and I want it out because I don't know if it's bitey or not.
It doesn't.
Yeah, see the way it jumps and flies around?
Bit, yeah.
I don't want it here. Well, I think
you should kill it then.
I tried killing it. I've tried killing it 3 times today. It's just there.
Maybe there's more than one? Because I thought you were looking at that other window.
Yeah, that's where I killed the other one, allegedly. I can't have an infestation of these things. I will slit my wrists, Olivia.
It'd be a weird infestation. What even would you call it?
Some weird Guillermo del Toro-ass insect?
It really is. It looks like it was created to stop the Jeremiah plague or whatever that fucking... The Jericho plague.
Well, on today's episode of What Bug Is in Vanessa's Kitchen...
Are we recording?
We've been recording.
Okay, right on.
I mostly just wanted to get that just so I can get the
wonder of us
being fascinated by a bug in
the
moment.
It's a pretty cool bug.
It's a pretty cool bug. It's just, I don't know if I want it this close to me and flying.
No, I get it. I would kill it if it were me.
I let spiders live with me because they usually keep their distances from me. Like a spider, I'm like, all right, I told you to be here and then you're here. And they stay that way.
No.
Whatever this dude is, I hate him.
No, he's got a wild heart.
He's got a wild heart, and I don't like it.
Maybe like 6. I don't know how. Bugs have lots of hearts, right?
Oh, God.
Isn't that a thing?
Well, this is our new co-host.
This weird bug. I don't even know what it is. It's like a cross between a cricket and a wasp.
Hey, this is Vanessa Gritton, and you're listening to Lowest Common Denominator.
Hi. Hi, yeah, I'm Olivia Haidar. I'm another host of this show, along with... Buggy.
We can give him a better name than Buggy.
It reminds me of one. I think the first Ant-Man movie is not a particular, like, it's a fun movie, but it's not, you know, top tier movies as far as they go. It's a fine, functional, fun movie. It does have one exceptional line where Paul Rudd is riding the ant for the first time, and he asks what the ant's name is. And he said, it doesn't have a name. And Michael Douglas says, it doesn't have a name, it has a number. Do you have any idea how many ants there are? Which is just a line that I think about a lot. It's like, do you have any idea how many ants there are?
I love lines like that so much. Little throwaway lines to where a person doesn't truly realize this, like,
right.
The span of
There's so many ants.
And then it's called, I'm going to call you Antony.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is the name.
I just watched Ant-Man, and then they, like, they give the ant, like, a tragic death. The ant gets shot, and then it gets, like, a little moment of tragedy. That movie's pretty fun.
Antony!
It's got some fun moments.
I spent an entire month after that movie telling people I would die for Antony.
Yeah, he's one of the best characters in film history, honestly.
Yeah, honest to God. He's up there with the penguin from Neon Genesis, where they're just good boys.
Yeah. Oh, Pin-Pin.
Pin-Pin. Pin-Pin and Antony are just good boys.
Yeah, we're probably, like, I really want to talk about Evangelion on this show.
There's a lot we want to talk about.
Like, eventually, whatever we're talking about today.
So, I finally saw The Matrix.
Oh, yeah, okay, well, first, okay, we'll get to that. We will get to that.
Olivia, housekeeping time.
I just want to say... Neon Genesis Evangelion is on Netflix now, and they had to redub it in English for Netflix, and it's weird. It's just weird to watch. It's weird and difficult to watch.
Yeah.
And the actors all do a great job. I don't want to, like, I wouldn't slander any of the actors. They're all doing perfectly fine. I think maybe there were some mistakes made in localizing the script, but...
Yeah.
It's been on my mind a lot recently. That's been the big news of the last week.
That's what I'm going to do the second you leave here.
Yeah. Watch that show.
Yeah.
It's good. Like, it still is good to watch. It's just like, you know. It doesn't. That original dub just, man.
That original Shinji.
Yeah. He Spike Spencer just has this prepubescent scream that is just so agonizing.
I can think of it now where it's like, every time Shinji shrieks in pain, this mom thing in me that I didn't know existed activates.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I have to protect him.
Like, the emotions on that original dub get so raw. And I feel like the new dub, the cast does a great job. But just it's a little bit more subdued. It's a little bit they play it more quote unquote naturalistically, which I feel like is a mistake for a cartoon
about teenagers, especially.
Yeah, exactly, for a cartoon about teenagers in extreme circumstances. But Neon Genesis Evangelion is still great. It's still great. Really, really, really good show. But yeah, so we're technically going to be talking about A Scanner Darkly that you've seen the episode title, you fucking know. But you...
I wanted to trick them.
Oh, well, there's an episode title on the podcast.
I would have said a Keanu Reeves sci-fi movie.
But don't, because then that makes it confusing for the rest of our episodes.
My brand is confusing.
I like to have nice, orderly named episodes.
And I like to be an agent of chaos.
So yeah, we went and saw The Matrix. Well, before we dive into The Matrix, before we plug back in, we should say we missed last week. Life is weird.
Yeah, my pop pops is.
I didn't know how much you wanted to talk about it, but like, yeah,
I'd like to talk about it more than anything, just to like put him into the ether.
Totally.
But basically, I found out that my grandfather is dying, and it's the first time in my life I've ever been given notice on someone I love being about to pass. So it's both like a blessing and a curse, and that like I get to process it in time, but also now I've like anytime the phone rings I'm just like now
right.
I'm just like frazzled.
No, of course, yeah, like it weighs heavily on you.
Yeah.
even if it's maybe even like not saying this is the case, but like even if it's their time or whatever, just having that knowledge,
having the weight where
so
it's just
stressful.
Like, oh man, 2 weeks to 2 months,
and
thanks.
That plus job stresses and just our general chaotic schedules just made it. It would have been unhealthy for us to record an episode last week, so unfortunately we had to delay.
Last week was the most I've ever cried, but also tried to hold a normal conversation at the same time, so I looked like a crazy person. But what I will say is for about 10 seconds on Locom Phenom, just because I don't know if I will get this chance to again, for a man named Arturo, tonight, just watch any episode of Bonanza, any spaghetti western, any really good cowboy movie, because those are his favorite things.
Hell yeah.
So just put one on and think of a man named Arturo who was obsessed with cowboys even though he had never met one.
Yeah, watch The Wild Bunch for Arturo.
Oh, that's his favorite.
It's a great movie.
Yeah.
He's an incredible movie.
Wild Bunch, 310 to Yuma,
totally.
True Grit.
Yeah.
Hilarious, because like, he had never even met a cowboy in his life, but he watched cowboy shit all the time. That when my mom first immigrated here, his first requests in the mail were a pair of Wrangler jeans, Wild Country cologne, and his own Stetson.
Amazing.
And he has worn everything since up until I think like last month.
I know guys. I know those guys.
Yep.
Totally.
Yep. Everybody's like, people feel like spaghetti western is such a weird genre for me to love, and I'm like, wait till you see the old man I spent all my time with.
Also, they're good movies.
They're good movies.
Usually really fun. I like a good western.
My grandfather never gave a shit about any video game I played until he saw me play Red Dead Redemption. He was like, what dead?
Oh, so you're saying you're a cowboy.
It's like, you're a cowboy? What kind of cowboy? Oh, you're a disgraced man.
Yeah, you're on the hunt for revenge, huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, man. Boy, was my grandfather ever sold on demon magic more than that moment.
So things are rough right now.
Yeah.
But we got an episode this week.
It was inspired by the fact that we just saw The Matrix together. Well,
yeah,
me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so for those who don't know, Vanessa had never seen The Matrix until last week. And that's an achievement.
Yeah.
Was it last week or was it a week before?
About a week and a half ago. I had seen every other Wachowski movie pretty much.
Yeah, that's the funny thing.
I'm a Wachowski fan.
You're a Wachowski fan. Like, yeah, because you've also seen every movie that ripped off The Matrix over the last 20 years.
Yeah, Kung Pao, Scary Movie.
Like Equilibrium.
Equilibrium. I just actually wrote a sketch about that.
yeah, you can check it out at the Matrix sketch.
But basically just the fact that, like, my whole life I've known what Bullet Time is without actually having seen Bullet Time.
Yeah.
And,
or seen the crappy versions of it.
Or any, like, I've seen every other weird part of it, and so I went to go see it with Olivia, Ethan, and Dane, and I was, like, really nervous, because I think it's kind of like when I saw The Big Lebowski 2, where I've seen every other Coen Brothers movie.
The Big Lebowski 2? breaking news!
There's a sequel! I'm in it! I saw The Big Lebowski after I saw every other Coen Brother movie,
right.
And I know some people get that, where they're, like, really anxious about seeing the best work of a director they like, because they're like, what if it doesn't hold up to what everyone
right.
said? And several times I looked at Olivia, and I was like, this is so sweet.
Here's a newsflash, guys. The Matrix is a really good movie.
It's a very good movie.
I know this might be, like, kind of a shocking and controversial opinion, but The Matrix rules. Like,
it's sweet.
Yeah.
The soundtrack is awesome.
It's dope. I think I would describe it as dope as fuck.
The rate of information is awesome.
Yeah.
The effects hold up.
Oh, yeah. All the effects look really good.
There's a building and it ripples like it's water.
Yes. We saw it in 35mm at the local Los Angeles movie theater called The Vista, which is a nice little one screen theater here in Los Angeles, which is a great place to watch The Matrix.
Yeah.
And boy, was it just a blast. I don't think I'd seen it in 35mm since it was in theaters.
Yeah, I'm so happy that that's how
so,
I got to see it for my first
yeah.
time. And I've seen it 7 times since.
What?
I didn't tell you this part.
You've watched it 7 times?
I have watched it...
in the last week and a half?
7 times in the last week and a half since we last hung out.
Like, I think that's what happened when I first saw The Matrix, but also, like, it was 20 years ago.
I know, but I have... There's a lot for me to think about.
No, it's got a lot of stuff going on.
I keep going back, and I... God.
So 7 times.
7 times in a week
Holy
and a half.
Holy shit. And you haven't watched either of the sequels?
Not yet.
Don't listen to the hype about the sequel. Like, people really rag on the Matrix sequels, and they're not, like... They're definitely not as good as The Matrix. Shocker.
Yeah.
But, like... they're fun.
They're
decent. They've got some they've got some choppy special effects. They've got some stuff that doesn't necessarily hold up great.
Yeah.
But, like, overall, it's a fun experience.
I am like your uncle that just learned there was porn on the internet and disappeared for a week.
Oh.
Except it's the movie The Matrix.
Right.
And it's just chief and joints.
Yeah.
To The Matrix.
Yeah, you're just sitting around smoking weed and be like, have you guys ever seen this Matrix thing? It really makes you think.
That's who I am right now.
You're every stoner from 1999.
This has caused, like, a tiny, tiny buzz on my Twitter because, like, people have been slowly finding this out and then yelling it on anything that's broadcasted.
Right.
So then people are just like, hold up, what the fuck? And they're like, but don't you, like, love the movie Bound? And I'm like, I'll talk about Bound all the time.
Yeah, you've seen Bound. Have you seen Speed Racer?
I love Speed Racer.
Speed Racer's a great movie.
I love Speed Racer. I enjoyed Sense8.
Sense8's great.
The fact that I've seen Sense8 but hadn't seen The Matrix made everyone at Screen Junkies lose their fucking minds.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think necessarily, like, it's tough to say that it's not their best film. But also, I really love, like, I love Cloud Atlas. I think that is one of the best movies of the last decade. So,
But yeah, as soon as we saw The Matrix, we just knew we had to talk about a Scanner Darkly.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. We knew we definitely had the movie A Scanner Darkly in mind before we came and started recording today.
It wasn't something I suggested because Amazon suggested it, and I just saw The Matrix, and I looked at Olivia and said, you know what? This actually feels like it's a really good choice for our podcast.
Yeah. It, you know, totally. I'm glad that we're talking about A Scanner Darkly.
I am too, because going in, I was just like, we're watching a movie. And then halfway through, I was like, I'm so happy I watched this movie again as an adult.
Yeah.
I did not appreciate it at the age
100%.
I watched it.
100%. But first, what's your favorite part of The Matrix?
Okay.
You've watched it 7 times now. You should know good parts.
So, first watching, obviously, the helicopter.
Yeah, that helicopter crash, I think, gets overlooked a lot. That's a cool moment.
First watching, that helicopter crash is amazing. Yeah. And I think about it literally all the time.
Yeah.
And then second watching, I was like, holy shit, this shootout is the most perfect thing I'd ever seen.
Yeah. The big, old, like, very parodied shootout in the lobby of the office building.
And upon the third watching, I started focusing more and more on these small things. And then I think because of just its cartoonishness, Trinity's gunshot to the head on the roof.
Oh, yeah.
Might be my favorite moment.
Dodge this.
Because it's such an early 2000s moment, and in a way that isn't make fun of a ball, but it's just perfect.
It's the moment that defined that kind of trend. Like, yes. It is, like, that's the thing is, like, this movie was the source of so many trends in film and culture for the next 10 years.
Yeah, and Dodge This was all of it hyper-distilled into one moment.
Yeah.
And so every time I go back, I get, like, the same kind of, like, here it comes excitement for Dodge This.
I really love the bathroom fight with when Morpheus is trying to fight the agent to let them get away. Yeah, where he, like, puts his elbows up and screams and then busts through the wall like the Kool-Aid man and then starts fighting the agent. But it's so great because it's like you've literally just come from the Oracle and she's been like, sorry, you're not the one. Morpheus is wrong. But he's going to act a fool and sacrifice himself.
So you're like, this is the moment. This is the moment, exactly.
But like in the entire movie up until that point, like Morpheus is the coolest fucking person in the entire planet.
Yeah.
And can do no wrong. And now you're looking at him, you're like, oh man, this is
a bummer.
What
if he's just a crazy guy in a coat?
Like, I don't want this to happen. Like, you shouldn't do this. I think that's a really good moment.
Yeah.
Good movie.
I love that movie.
I think it does. Honestly, I think it doesn't get talked enough about how good The Matrix is. Although there have been a million podcasts about it, which is why we're not going to do it with an episode.
Which is why we're
going
to do Scanner Darkly, because one of the initial reasons that I wanted to watch it so bad was because it was Keanu, and I've always thought he was very, very pretty.
Yes.
And I saw the cover, and I was like, pretty man, I like Winona Ryder. Ooh, Robert Downey Jr.'s back, and it looks like cartoons, and oh my god, Orange County.
Yeah.
And those were all factors that made me want to watch it when I was 14. And then I was like, this movie's boring. And then as an adult, I was like, I was wrong.
Oh, yeah. This movie is a lot of things, but boring is not one of them.
No, because as a kid, I didn't understand how on point everyone was in their increasing paranoia. As a kid, it was just something I couldn't follow. As an adult, it was flawless mania.
Yeah, I was 18, and I was a projectionist at an art theater when A Scanner Darkly came out, and it was at our theater, and that's when I saw it the first time, and I liked it. I remember liking it, and I don't think I've watched it since it came out, but it was always one that I kind of remembered fondly, but I always wondered, like, how it would hold up if I went back and watched it, and it's really, I really enjoyed it. I had a lot of fun watching it. I'm glad that that's what we went with. It really, especially now that I have lived more of a life, and have, done drugs myself and have, hung out with people who do even more drugs than me and people who are on that scuzzier side, it's so accurate and empathetic to this, people, and I really found that super engaging watching.
Yeah.
Like, I found it very funny. I remember finding it very funny. It's very funny through parts, but I didn't quite get how, like, realistic it is as a portrayal of drug use.
Well, because in so many moments, it could have been, like, Go Ask Alice, where it's, like, these morons, and what were they thinking, and, or it could have been like, well, these scuzzbags had it coming anyway.
Right.
And every single person was a different kind of person that fell prey to the same thing.
Totally, yes.
They were all there's nothing about them morally or in their lives that should automatically indict them to this. This was something sinister that was going to take them anyway.
Right, exactly.
And very rarely when it comes to subjects of drug use is something so empathetic.
Yeah.
It's usually just straight up to terrorize the viewer as opposed to take kindness upon these kind of characters.
Right, exactly.
And the animation does a really good job of making everything feel uncanny to where it's not that kind of uncanny that Beowulf was, where it's, like, gross.
Right, right. Well, yeah, well, Beowulf was doing the full motion capture CG animation.
And I hate that.
And it was weird.
And this was cel-shaded. And also, the characters themselves moved in a way to where they moved like it was a comic book panel, to where it felt more like an animated comic than it did something. In the moments that it felt more real, it just felt more surreal when it had to anyway.
Yeah, and it uses this rotoscoping thing, which Richard Linklater, the director, had used previously in his film Waking Life.
Mm-hmm.
That was the element that I think I was the most skeptical of returning back to it, and I was thinking it might not hold up, it might not look very good.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it looks great. It really does convey that unreality of being on psychedelics.
When you're a little bit fucked up.
Yeah, like if you're like, if your brain has been blasted by drugs and you are like on a ton of psychedelics, like the world doesn't look like a cartoon. Like you don't see cartoon characters and shit. Like that's like the stereotype of doing like LSD or whatever. Mm. But it is like, everything is more heightened, textures shift, facial features kind of blur and shift into each other, which is something that the rotoscoping technology really enhances. Like, especially if you focus on any person's like facial features while they're talking, you notice things moving and shifting in slight ways and blurring together. And that's really evocative of that feeling of being on a ton of psychedelics.
Yeah.
That's like a huge thing. And everybody talks, like they do kind of strike from pose to pose every 3 seconds, like a comic book, but also in this way that is very recognizable drug user behavior. Mm-hmm. And I think it's interesting that, I don't know about Keanu, I don't know what his deal with drugs is, but the film also stars Robert Downey Jr., who is famously a drug addict, who had recently gotten sober before doing this movie. This is his post-Kiss Kiss Bang Bang,
pre-Iron Man,
where now all he does is play Iron Man.
Yeah.
And he's giving this incredible crackhead performance. Like, he is...
Every choice is the right choice.
It really is. He's astounding in this movie.
The way he punctuates words, the way he looks at someone, the way he moves his glasses up his face,
he's
or
just
eats.
Constantly got the... He's got that manic know-it-all energy.
Yeah.
That you can see will later become the current Downey Jr., like, persona.
Yeah.
But it's so heightened and warped and twisted and like...
It's this manic, how do you not understand that I'm 1,000 miles ahead
exactly.
already?
Exactly. He's always the smartest person in the room, and he's always like, even when in the course of one conversation, he will go from saying one thing to saying the exact opposite thing while still claiming that he was right earlier.
The whole time.
Like, it's this tremendous ability.
It's the mental gymnastics of someone fucked up out of their mind.
Exactly. Someone who's...
But played straight.
Yeah, exactly. Someone who's just on this manic streak, who is... but also this very particular kind of male intellectual.
So Olivia and I were sitting here trying to like figure out this dude, because we saw the cargo shorts.
Oh my fucking
tinted
god!
Glasses.
His the wardrobes in this movie are astounding. Because
we just know he's into infected mushroom.
Yeah, yes.
And he loves Yonan Vasquez.
Yeah, yeah.
He definitely has several velvet posters.
Yeah, so his main outfit is like camo cargo shorts and a t-shirt and
with
like
some kind of tech thing on it.
Yeah, and then like these narrow tinted glasses.
Either the narrow tinted ones or the block strip that goes like all the way around the
head.
Yeah, yeah. Like every 2003 through 2006
God.
Rave dude that had a soul patch.
Yes, yeah. Oh, I'm surprised he didn't have a little soul
right?
patch.
I feel like they might have had a lot. And it's great because we have this dude that you and I have for sure gotten high with before.
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely talked to this guy at parties in LA.
I've definitely let them touch a boob.
Vanessa, you can't let the crackheads touch your boob.
I know, but it was like, I'm stoned, you're stoned, there's black lights, you're really into the kind of music that you listen to when you play D&D, and I'm like, you know what, I'll be a highlight in your life.
That's a good perspective. I'll be...
Didn't mean for it to come out that way, but it was honest the
yeah.
second it came out.
I'll be a good memory that you think about for the rest of your life.
Yeah, totally. I'll be a fun spank bank. I'll be a fun thing that you're like, that was cool that that happened. And I'll be like, you know what? This is my version of putting some change in the Salvation Army.
Yeah, exactly. It's your take a penny, leave a penny.
It's like, you know what? I've taken a lot of pennies. I've taken way too many pennies in my life. It's time for me to leave a penny.
Take a penny, leave a penny.
Oh my God. But yeah, Robert Downey Jr. is killing it.
Yeah, no, it really is a tremendous. I think it's the highlight performance of the movie. I mean, it's one of the showier performances. I mean,
yeah.
It's not the showiest performance, which I think would go to Rory Cochran, who is doing the most acting that has ever been committed to film.
His eyes are everywhere.
He is literally, he's saucer-eyed the entire time, flicking back and forth over
his head
and over
up
again.
And down and
yeah,
himself
never being still, which is his own, like, it's definitely true to a certain type of tweaker.
Mm.
But,
yeah, he's like the neighborhood crackhead that's more far gone than the other crackheads.
Yeah, exactly. And then you've got Woody Harrelson, who is kind of playing more of a stoner. He's like just kind of like a chill dude.
Well, he's got like that stoner chill, but he also flips to anger really
quickly.
Yeah,
it seems like he probably does a lot of like opioids.
Yeah.
Because yeah, he can like flip on a dime. To wigging out.
Yeah.
And then you've got Keanu Reeves playing Bob Arctor.
I hate that last name so much.
It's distracting.
It's like actor?
It's actor, but with another R in the middle.
It's Rurer Durer.
It is, yeah. He's playing the Rurer Durer.
And then you have Winona Ryder doing
Winona
does best.
She's terrific in this movie. And, you know, spoiler alert for A Scanner Darkly, a 13-year-old movie, but it is revealed that she is Keanu Reeves' boss at the police station.
And the mastermind.
And the kind of the mastermind. Well, she's like...
A cog in
yeah,
the mastermind.
Yeah, she's like she's manipulating him, but also is still working for the man higher up.
Because basically... The entire time you think she's, like, the cokehead girlfriend.
Totally. And and Winona is doing a tremendous job at playing this woman who is just... You just kind of... Like, every time she's around, you just get kind of bummed out.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, she seems nice.
Yeah.
But kind of destroyed.
And then you just get this empathy for her that
yeah.
makes the turn all the more like, oh, God.
Yeah. And then you still retain that empathy, I think. I think they do a pretty good job of not turning her into a villain, necessarily.
She hates what she's doing.
Yeah.
She hates what she's doing, but she's fighting an unwinnable war.
Right. And she is a cop in ACAB, so...
ACAB
like,
except for Detective Pikachu.
Exactly. ACAB except for Detective Pikachu. I do have that tattooed on my collarbone now.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's the basic cast. And the movie is... This very shaggy, you know, we should say it's an adaptation of a Philip K. Dick novel,
yeah.
And it's based on Philip K. Dick's own experiences after his fourth marriage.
Yeah.
He was divorced and living in this house in Orange County, and he would just let homeless people come in and live in his house and do drugs and, like, hang out with him because he wanted to have people in his house.
That was most of the people that I knew in Orange County.
Oh, were people who did that?
Yeah.
Or just homeless people?
No joke. Like, a lot of people in New Orange County, there was one guy who would just have the house that everyone went to.
Oh, yeah.
And he just didn't want to be alone, so you would just all be there and you would just use it, his house. Like, I remember all of their homes vividly.
Right, yeah.
Where they just had these shelled-out houses in, like, Fullerton and Anaheim, Anaheim being one of the cities that this actually takes place in.
Yes.
Santa Ana being a really big one for it. And it would just be like, well, my parents died, and I got really into heroin and really lonely, so if you want to come in and just sleep in a room and then just do drugs, then
yeah.
go for it. So that was just, like, the house for it.
There you go.
So it's actually very accurate.
Totally. Yeah, and so that's what, so Philip K. Dick did that for a few years in the 70s
mm-hmm.
and got hooked on amphetamines and then got put into rehab and cleaned up eventually. Wikipedia also says that he was in a real, maybe non-sexual relationship with an older teenage girl, which is not great.
Yeah.
Not super, not good. Don't do it. It's not a good thing to do, guys.
Teenagers, don't do it.
Don't
know why I needed to say it like it was a PSA, and
teenagers.
I'm sorry.
Not even once.
Thank you for being the worst in a moment where I'm like, was I bad?
Yeah, I'll be worse. Don't worry. let's see. I've got some, he said there was an interview where Philip K. Dick said, "Everything in A Scanner Darkly I actually saw. And my wife Nancy left me in 1970. I got mixed up with a lot of street people just to have somebody to fill the house. She left me with a 4-bedroom, 2-bathroom house and nobody living in it but me. So I just filled it with street people and I got mixed up with a lot of people who were into drugs."
So.
And yeah, and like, and that's a thing that comes through a lot in this film,
yeah.
is a knowing, like a knowledge of how people on a ton of drugs act in general.
Yeah.
And that's like the main, I think, hook of the movie almost.
There's this escalating moment of like the silly moments when you're all on drugs and you're just going on these very weird paranoid tangents
right.
that are silly and funny at first. And there's this lightness to it in the beginning. That there tends to be with anybody who's ever listened to this network in the last 5 years knows about Dance with Addiction. There's a lightness to it at the beginning.
Right.
Where it's just like, this is fine.
Yeah.
This is funny. Those.
Yeah, the movie is pretty funny
yeah.
throughout most of it. But yeah, it has a light touch for a lot of it.
Yeah, it has a light touch for... It does a good job of trusting the audience for the moment of the turn... Where it has such a light touch for so much of the movie that when the turn happens and you start to realize how deep into his own addiction is,
right.
it's gradual but all at once.
Yeah.
You could see the scale just
yeah,
sliding.
Yeah, it's not out of, like, you, when it's revealed how out of his mind he is and impaired he is. Like, you understand it because you've seen, like, his giant bag of red pills that he keeps
yeah.
under his mattress and these things. But, yeah, it's not, like, a sudden reveal. But then, like, but, you know, even when it's maintaining this air of humor, it's also, it never loses the empathy or the tragedy or the sadness that kind of hides behind a lot of, like, the funny
yeah.
moments. It never loses track of that. It never, like, gets too... But it also, at the same time, it never gets lost in the tragedy of it all.
It's a really perfect dance between this is sad, but they're still humans.
Right, exactly.
Because a lot of the times when it goes to this is sad, it's this is sad, they're not humans anymore. They're tools for my tragedy.
Right, yeah, exactly.
And in this case, it's sad, but there's still people in there.
Yeah, it's sad, but also drug addicts are funny a lot of the time. Like,
because they're clever
and
highly sensitive people
and also because drugs are fun
and they're fun.
That's why people do them. Like, that's why people get addicted to drugs is because
yeah.
they're a fun time.
And acting like it's not doesn't help.
Exactly.
And it also adds to this is why you should care about them.
Right.
Because a lot of the times where it's like, well, they're the faceless addict. And
yeah.
it's like, no, these are funny, charming people.
Very specific personalities. And,
yeah.
like, you may like or dislike them, each to a whatever degree, mm-hmm. but they all are recognizable humans.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, Robert Downey Jr., even him, like, even he is, like, likable. You, even though he is an objectively obnoxious person.
Yeah.
Who I would hate in real life. But also, I've hung out with that guy.
I hate him in real life, and I've hung out with that guy, but I also know that that guy deserves...
He's still a guy. Like, yeah, he's still a human.
Safety,
yeah.
And, like, it does a really good job, too, of showing the cycle of it when it comes to, like, willfully entering people in situations.
Right.
Yeah,
it and how the system is destroying the people who are... who have to interact with it.
Yeah, the system is both responsible for and destroying people in the event of cleaning up what they're responsible for.
Exactly. Yeah, so, like, I guess we'll just say... this, like I said earlier, this movie... The plot of this movie, such as it is extremely loose.
Yeah.
And very shaggy.
It is not obvious until the last, like, 20 minutes.
That there even is a plot,
yeah.
Honestly. Yeah. Like, it is a very... shaggy, vignette-y movie. Like, it's basically little, like...
Slices of life.
Each scene is, like, its own separate little ecosystem where you're, like, where you... Which also kind of reflects habitual drug use, where, like, you are coming into awareness in this situation and learning the rules of whatever situation you're in at any given time. And the rules change and warp and escalate throughout the scene and throughout... this experience, and then until it is something completely different by the end
mm-hmm.
of the scene, and that, like, is very reflective of being, like, doing, like, a hardcore drug, and, like, being in, like, you'll just start out with, like, oh, hey, Robert Downey Jr. brought a bike home, cool, all right, he bought a bike off of somebody for $50.
And now they're having an argument over whether or not it was a good deal.
Right, yeah, exactly. And so they start off like, hey, check it out. I got this bike for $50. Look at it. It's an 18 speed, and it's great. And then it just goes like, well, wait, but aren't there only 9 gears? Well, yeah, no, well, some of them are hidden. And it just kind of like, everyone is just ping-ponging off of each other, and their neurons are firing almost randomly.
And then it's 8 speeds, and then
until,
they're keeping them from us.
Yeah, until by the end, they're, like, thinking about going back to where he got the bike and beating the shit out of the guys until they give him the extra gears.
Yeah, like, I started laughing.
Which is, it's hilarious.
It's hilarious, because, like, I started laughing because it made me think of, like, those moments where they were, like, legitimately funny.
Yeah.
And I remember talking about them in NA and other addicts being like, can we laugh at this? And being like, yes, because they were legitimately funny in the
yeah.
moment. Like, there's one night where I was so coked out of my mind, a conversation started on how our fathers have disappointed us and ended on me screaming over a balcony at one of my friends, I can fight Little Wayne if I wanted to!
I think you could.
I was very mad that nobody believed I was strong enough to take Little Wayne.
You could take him. I think that's... Have you seen Little Wayne?
I mean, I could take him. I'm sober. but I loved watching it as an adult, too, and being like, I now identify with all of these areas
yeah,
of Orange
like,
County and also all of these people.
Oh, totally. Yeah, the Orange County. Yeah, that's something I'd forgotten about. I just remembered it taking place in
and
California.
It's my area of Orange County.
Yeah.
Because usually when you hear Orange County, you're like, it's Long Beach or Laguna Beach or parts of Orange County
right,
that people
right,
give
right.
a shit about. But when it's like the Anaheim, Santa Ana, fucking Fullerton Circle, that that's my whole area? Oh, my God. That's my hometown.
It
hit a harder place than I thought it would.
Yeah.
The scanner uniform, the police.
So yeah,
suits
yeah, and like one,
fascinating.
I think it's like maybe the first scene of the film.
It's the biggest sci-fi aspect.
Yeah, that's the thing. Is like this is a dystopian movie and it is a science fiction movie. Although most of the dystopian, what's really terrifying about this movie when you start to think about it is most of the dystopian elements of it. The constant surveillance and the authoritarian government and that sort of thing are not very different from what is actually happening in the world just 13 years later.
Yeah. Still the same.
Yeah, like, the most outlandish element is there are these, they call them scramble suits.
Yeah.
And basically, and it's the most, it's definitely the most visually striking element of the movie. And like, and again, this is a rotoscoped animated movie, so like everything is pretty visually interesting.
Yeah.
But like, the those suits are just, it's hard to even like, it's just like they explain them up front where basically it's this full body including head suit that the undercover police officers wear at all times when they're not on the job in order to maintain anonymity. And it's like a shifting patchwork collage of different pieces of faces and bodies and clothes, mm-hmm. like mixed and matched, constantly swirling and moving and changing, which is a very odd thing to look at. Like, it's a very striking and very creepy. And they all have these, like, modulated voices, which are, it's good because they like got another voice actor to do the voices for the suits and then modulated those voices, so they don't sound anything like Keanu Reeves.
Yeah, so it adds to that who is this,
right? Exactly. You never know who's behind the suit, which is the idea of the suit.
Yeah.
Which
makes the moments where you see Keanu's face in the suit,
yes,
more impactful.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, he gets these like Iron Man shots from
yeah.
inside of the suit, where it's just a close-up of his face, like, bathed in a soft light. And, yeah, it's an interesting mechanic. And that's how the secrecy of Winona Ryder being his boss is kept.
Yeah, because I remember the first time watching it, really having that, my God, I did not see this coming moment.
Yeah, I had forgotten that that was the twist until,
yeah.
Until watching it this time.
I love that the sci-fi elements aren't so over the top that it feels
yeah.
like Black Mirror, but it's still grounded enough in reality.
Yeah, what are the other most outlandish elements? Like,
there's the suit itself.
There's the suit, and then there's, I think, like, the other, like, the weird element is, and this is, like, almost, like, brushed over, but has also come true now, is Robert Downey Jr. at a later point, he starts being an informant.
Yeah.
For the police.
Yeah.
Informing on Keanu Reeves, to Keanu Reeves,
yeah.
even though he doesn't know. And he brings in a voice recording of Keanu and Winona talking to each other about blowing something up, like with a fertilizer bomb or whatever. And that is the other most, probably the most outlandish tech, is just, like, fake voices, and
yeah.
that exists now.
Yeah.
Like, people do that.
A lot of the moments that were supposed to be outlandish are not, like, the fake voices. The idea that the people that are trying to help you get better are the ones supplying it in the first place.
Yeah, totally, which ends up being the ultimate twist, and that's
yeah.
what the conspiracy was about in the first place.
That the rehab is taking these people that have been mentally burnt out
right.
and are having them essentially work to harvest these blue flowers
right.
that are the origin of Substance D.
Yes.
And that's the part where you're just like, it's the whole Soylent Green was people
yeah.
moment. But then as we like get closer and closer to reality now, it's like these, a Skinner Darkly is really interesting, where this thing that it does in the movie is like a what if isn't actually true now, where it's like these conspiracy theorists, kind of tapping on something right, and now we're realizing like how much has been done by the systems that are supposed to protect you
yeah.
to get you hooked onto a very substance they control.
Totally.
Which leads me to the weirdest part of this movie.
Oh, yeah, I guess we'll just talk about that up front. I guess it's not even up front, but like, Alex Jones is in this movie.
I looked at Olivia and I was like, holy shit, is this Alex Jones?
Yeah, and I denied it. I was like, no, that's not, I mean, yeah, it looks like Alex Jones and it sounds like Alex Jones, but there's no way that Alex Jones is in A Scanner Darkly.
And
that
then
would
you looked
be
it up.
That would be too weird. And then I did look it up, and yeah, Alex Jones plays a street side, he's called like the
Street Prophet.
Street Prophet. And he's just, like, a guy yelling on a street corner about conspiracy theories. And then I think maybe the part of that that has aged the worst, because otherwise, pretty spot on. Yeah, that's kind of who Alex Jones is. But then, like, these the cops show up and like haul him away in an unmarked van, and which kind of implies that he's telling the truth, and that's not super accurate about Alex Jones. And apparently, Richard Linklater has addressed this. You were looking up quotes.
Yes. So, Linklater, in a Vice interview, he was like, Alex Jones is this guy in public access TV. Not everybody really knew about him at the time.
Right.
I liked his energy because he was kind of a joke, and he was something that we all kind of made fun of as, like, this high-energy conspiracy theorist. They got to know him a little bit because he was in Waking Life, and so he was like, I just wanted to be a version of himself in both cases.
Right.
So he's just like this authentic shouting maniac because he's not really an actor.
No.
And Linklater was like, I was surprised because he never seemed more than just like a screaming maniac. He's like, I wouldn't even say that he's a good manipulator because he just seemed dumb to me.
Yeah, that's the thing. He's not a good manipulator.
And then he was like, he was just so anti-everyone that Linklater liked the anti-everyone idea, which is why the Trump thing surprised Linklater so much, because he's like, you're so anti-everyone, why are you so pro-establishment with this guy?
Yeah, I wonder why.
Linklater is very much like, definitely, guys, whoops.
Yeah, I like that he's just immediately like, oh, yeah, hey, sorry, had no idea. This was 10 years before he had national relevance, so.
Yeah, he thought he was harmless at the time.
That's what everybody, you know, that's the saying, isn't it?
Yep. He's like, you're supposed to be a blow shit upper from the outside, and now you're the inside.
Yes.
But holy shit, Alex Jones is in a Scanner Darkly.
Yeah, it's really weird.
He's always looked like he's about to scream himself into a heart attack.
Yeah, and now he just looks like a tomato.
Yeah, he fully looks like a tomato, and I wonder if there's a makeup artist that has to wipe all of the spittle away from the corners of his mouth in between takes.
No, that's there for authenticity.
Oh, it just soaks into the dryness of the patchy scales of his skin.
Yeah, exactly. He's a lizard person. Yeah. That's the real twist to that our world has been building up to, is that Alex Jones is one of the lizard people that he's been yelling about.
Yeah, the whole time.
I actually don't know if he's ever yelled about lizard people.
No, he's yelled about frogs being gay, though.
Yeah, I know the frogs are gay thing.
So now I get to be like, I'm as gay as a frog. I will say something very sweet that I did not notice as a kid,
mm-hmm.
and I did not understand why it was there, and I do as an adult now, is the Philip K. Dick note at the end.
Yes, yeah.
Which is a dedication to everyone who has lost to the war that is...
Yeah, which, and this is literally...
Prescription drug.
It's a complete transcription of the foreword from... I mean, sorry, the afterword from the original novel.
Yeah.
And he just lists all these people that he knew that either died or suffered.
Including himself,
who he loved, who suffered horrible fates due to drug abuse. And ends on a really... it's this nice note of, like, it wasn't... You know, it's not, they weren't bad people. They were, this bad thing was done to them.
Yeah. It ends surprisingly hopeful, both on the letter.
Yeah.
And the moment in the field.
It ends,
I want to say if it's across the board hopeful.
Hopeful is tough.
But here's the thing. Here's why I say hopeful. Because a lot of the times when it comes to being in the deep of addiction, any kind of option is hope.
Yeah.
Because you're, for the longest time, it's like, well, there's only one option, and
right.
it's dying, and that's all that it's going to be. So I wouldn't say that it's hopeful and that things are going to get better, but it's hopeful because it's like, options now exist.
Right, right. It's interesting. And we should talk about Keanu Reeves' performance. I think this is a highlight of his career, I think.
It's beautifully understated.
It's a really, really lovely performance. Of this guy who is just not there.
Yeah.
Most of the time. Like, he's just not present in his life at all.
He's utterly a passenger to everything happening around him.
Yes.
And those moments, like, when he talks about looking at his life and being like, I need to run from this.
Yeah.
And from the moments that he realizes that he's being penalized for doing his job and being put into the situation.
Yeah, yeah.
and he's not really that lucid anymore, but he just looks back and basically just tells all of them to fuck themselves.
Yeah.
That last moment of, like, I'm trapped, but I can still tell you that you're a monster for what you did. It's a beautiful performance. It's one of those performances where now I'm angrier that there was so much time that people were like, Keanu's a bad actor.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. Like, this is one of those movies. I mean, like, I think most of his movies put the lie to that. But yeah,
most of his movies put the lie to that. But people didn't start changing their tune until John Wick.
And even The Matrix, like, he's like, his performance in The Matrix is astounding.
It's astounding.
Literally no other human being on Earth could pull off the line, I know Kung Fu, and make it work and make it not sound terrible. Like, and not just make it the most annoying line in the entire world.
But it's just endearing.
It just works.
And
in this, like, he does have, like, he has this beating heart through the whole thing that's just, like, pure raw emotion that you just can't see behind his eyes, even though his eyes are animated.
Yeah.
It's just, like, something about how he's carrying it. He's so haunted through the whole thing. But he's also still, he still gets into those, like, I love the moments where he gets swept up in the people, everyone around him.
Yeah, sure. Somebody definitely
energy.
Broke into the house, and we have to sell the house now.
Exactly. Like he really does. Like, he's so quick to go along with anyone's insane theories.
You can get whiplash from his face showing some kind of resistance against the theory.
Yeah.
To him opening his mouth and more than just buying into the
theory. He's just like advancing.
Like, in one moment in his eyes, it's, I don't believe this. And then the next words out of his mouth, it's, not only are you right, here's how I'm going to make sure it's executed.
There's so many great scenes in this movie. And again, it's hard to talk about it from a plot standpoint because it just blurs from one scene to the next.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, you're in this scene for a while and you're listening to these people talk and you're in this next scene. And it is very reminiscent of how you move through life on drugs.
Yeah.
And, but, like, I love, like, there's the amazing scene where Rory Cochrane's character, Freck, who's, like, the twitchy guy, he decides that he's going to kill himself. And we know that he decides that he's going to kill himself because a voice on the radio starts narrating, saying
it's
that he's going to kill himself.
It's such a weird scene.
It's wonderful.
It's
where he
beautiful.
Because the movie opens with him hallucinating a bunch of bugs all over
his
body. His
hallucinations are gorgeous.
They're really well done and really creepy. All the
and
hallucinations.
Playful.
Yeah, playful. And, like there's the hallucination later where Keanu thinks that Woody Harrelson and Robert Downey Jr. are cockroaches, which is pretty funny looking.
It's so funny.
But there's this great scene. So the radio is narrating Freck's suicide, where he's decided he's going to take a bunch of downers and drink some nice wine.
$70 bottle.
Okay, not Thunderbolt. He throws the Thunderbolt away and goes to the store and buys a nice $70 bottle of wine. Because
if he's going
to
do it, he might be able to get a glass of Merlot.
Exactly.
Wearing a suit.
And, he's wearing a suit. And then he lays down in bed and takes the downers and drinks the wine, and a multidimensional being appears at the foot of his bed and starts reading off a list of his sins for the next eternity.
1,000 years later, he got to the time he finally started masturbating.
Yeah, in the sixth grade. That's such a great line. I love it so much. Very funny. It's a very funny scene, but again, like, it's a perfect example of how this movie toes the line between humor and darkness. And, like, real, like, human suffering. And still finding humor in these dark moments.
Yeah.
Without being twee. Like, there's nothing. I hate it when a movie makes suicide, like, cute.
Yeah.
Because suicide is not cute.
No.
It's always a desperate decision. And this movie plays it as this guy, he's at the end of his rope, literally. He is just out of ideas, out of options. His brain is completely fried by this drug, Substance D. And he is just out of it. And he's just like, and you just understand, like, yeah, this guy.
This is his option.
This guy wants to kill himself. But the humor still comes in a human navigating this situation.
Yeah. Where it's like, oh, this is a nightmare.
Yeah.
And I love that it still ends on an almost like Hitchhiker's Guide style of humor, where he's trapped for eternity with his internet eventual being really sins.
Yeah.
And his thought was, well, at least I had the wine.
Yeah, at least I had that nice wine.
Yep. That is such a Hitchhiker's
Guide. It's good, yeah.
Wrap up to
terror. And then it cuts, and then you don't, until the end, find out whether or not he actually, like,
he's in the
rehab. You cut away, and you think, like, oh, I guess...
He died.
I guess he killed himself.
And that's why I had a slight moment of hope as well in the rehab.
Yeah, that
like,
is, like, a nice moment.
Where it's like, all right, he's there, and sure, the rehab is a terrible place.
Yeah, the rehab is a literal torture place.
But he's alive,
yeah.
And there might be a glimmer of something in Keanu to get them out.
Yeah, he's got a chance.
Yeah.
Although, but like, and that's the thing that also kind of makes it bittersweet and kind of depressing is that Keanu's still working in the system. Like,
yeah.
He's still working for the cops, even though the cops fucked him over so hard.
It's the bittersweet of he has a chance, it's not a good one.
No.
But maybe there's something that'll get him out.
But I just love that suicide sequence.
It's magnificent.
It's so well done. And what are some... Anytime Robert Downey Jr. goes into the cops, both of those scenes are so funny, of him trying to be, like, the guy in charge, talking to the cops.
But they know
and
he's insane.
In the first scene, he's like, and I was thinking I would get an employment application.
No, dude.
He comes in on the most cocaine and is like, I think I can get a job with the cops. Sure, I can get a job with the cops.
It's
very funny. Let's see. There's the wonderful line when they're in the tow truck. Their car goes out of control. That's a big scene where something has happened. Someone sabotaged their car. And you never really find out who it was who sabotaged the car.
Or if it was just a shitty car.
I feel like you get the idea that maybe Robert Downey Jr. did it. But I don't know. It's hard to tell. And like that's like kind of like a something that's fun about this movie is there is kind of a conspiracy going on in
yeah.
their life, even though these people are way over the top paranoid and like definitely imagining things. It's fun to play that off of the fact that, well, yeah, sure,
something is going on. Though
they're paranoid and they're imagining things, but also their buddy Bob Arctor is an undercover cop, so it's not like they don't have any reason to not be to be paranoid. But yeah, I really like that, and because then the tow truck, they're going home, and Robert Downey Jr. says he left the door unlocked with a note on the door saying "Come on in." Saying "Come on in," the door's unlocked. Yeah, and then the entire tow truck rides them arguing whether that happened. Woody Harrelson's like, maybe they came in through the back door or the bathroom window, like in that infamous Beatles song, which is one of my favorite lines. The whole time, every once in a while, they'll just cut to the front seat with them in the background, and the truck driver just like, okay, I'm
these
not
are the guy they picked up.
I'm not engaging.
It's on Amazon Prime now. If
yeah,
you
it
to.
Is. It's on Amazon, so it's pretty easy to find. It's a good movie. I think it's not necessarily a forgotten classic, but like it's a gem that I think doesn't get the play.
You'll probably like it more than you remember liking it if you put it on right
Definitely.
Now.
Definitely. Like I really like, and I enjoyed it when it came out, but I never revisited it. And I kind of want to watch it again.
So do
like,
I.
I kind of want to go
I'm kind
home.
Of thinking about...
I might watch it again tomorrow.
Yeah.
Because, like, I really enjoy watching it.
I'm really happy we did this.
Yeah, me too. This was a great choice.
Good experiment.
We have... Guys, holy shit. We have no idea what the fuck is going on with this podcast.
Hollywood!
We know what the fuck is going on
with
this podcast.
We have a better idea now after... trying to figure some stuff out, because here's a fun thing. If you want to work in entertainment, learn how to hear the words circling back without screaming.
Yeah. Yes.
Once you can see the words circling back 1,000 times without wanting to hang yourself somewhere outside the Beverly Center screaming, it's all for you, Damien, but instead of Damien... the whole industry, then you're ready to work in this industry, Olivia.
Yeah, it's, you know.
I literally ducked.
The thing that we've been talking around for fucking weeks now is still, we're talking around it. We still can't talk about it.
We've just been given a dateline of when we probably can.
We'll see if it ends up happening.
But you know what we're going to do? We're going to do what we want to do next.
Exactly. So we've had a couple miniseries backlog that we kind of were putting off now.
Yeah.
With the standalone whatevers. This month has been such a mess. I'm so sorry, guys.
No, don't apologize, because the standalone whatevers, I've been getting so much cool feedback
from. No, they're fun, and I love doing them, and I'm so glad that we got to talk about Deep Rising, which is one of my favorite movies
of all
time.
And I'm so glad we got to talk about Osmosis Jones, because Lawrence Fishburne is the sexiest germ.
Totally. And that gives you a new appreciation for your viewing of The Matrix.
Yeah, now I want to have sex with Morpheus, too.
Yeah, totally.
I just really want Lawrence Fishburne.
And I'm so happy that we're talking about Scanner Darkly,
God,
but...
Lawrence Fishburne.
So we're gonna go back to our normal deal next month, starting in July.
Ha-cha-cha.
We're gonna do a, regardless of what ends up happening with whatever thing that we're working on. Who even knows? No one knows. No one knows. Literally, no one.
Yeah.
So next month we are going to be doing a mini series about. Just one of my favorite dudes. Just one of the best dudes in show business. Probably, right?
Yeah.
There can't be very many better dudes than Jackie Chan in all of show business.
Yeah.
So we're going to be talking about Jackie Chan. I think...
We're talking about Spy Next Door.
Jesus fucking Christ.
All right, it's not going to be Spy Next Door, but you agree... That one trashy family movie has to be in it, or we're disrespecting the legacy as a whole. I'm right. We have to include one.
We're gonna talk about one shitty American Jackie Chan movie.
Because...
At the end of the miniseries.
Because we must.
But next month, we're talking about Legend of Drunken Master.
Yes. Next month, we're talking about Legend of Drunken Master.
Next week.
Yes. That was my body expelling any notion that I'd get to do.
Next week we're going to talk about a good fucking movie.
Rush Hour is fun.
It's fine. It's directed by Brett Ratner.
I mean, fuck
Can't
Ratner.
Can't be that good.
But also, it's fun.
It's fine. It's fine.
Karate Kid.
Maybe. We haven't decided on which. It's going to be such a fight to figure out which
okay,
one.
Okay, it's definitely going to be... Like, Olivia and I are going to come back, and it's just going to be like, welcome back to Lois.
Okay, fine. This week we're going to be talking about the medallion. This week we're going to be talking about the tuxedo. God, he made so many shitty movies!
But Police Story should be talked about as well.
Yeah, we might talk about Police Story. I've got, like... Man, there's, like... This is another, like with Stephen King, this is another guy that we are going to be doing multiple miniseries over the course of the podcast lifespan.
Oh, yeah.
On Jackie Chan, because I am a gigantic Jackie Chan. Just like, he's been my hero since I was a tiny, like, 5-year-old kid.
Yeah.
And so, like, all I want to do is talk about Jackie Chan. I love Jackie Chan, man.
So stay tuned for Jackie Chan, man.
So, yeah, so now, yeah. So next week we'll either be talking about, we're still figuring out structuring and like scheduling and stuff, but it'll be an early Jackie Chan movie. So like, I want to talk about Legend of Drunken Master. I want to talk about Rumble in the Bronx.
We have to do Drunken Master and Rumble in the Bronx.
Those are the two Jackie Chan movies for me. I love them so much. But, the Police Story movies, I definitely would want to talk about. Or, he made any of his, like, mid-budget movies from the mid-90s, like Mr. Nice Guy, or Who Am I? Like, those are so weird and fun and have so many cool things. And I'll probably be talking a lot about the wonderful documentary produced and directed by Jackie Chan called My Stunts, which is just him for an hour and a half talking about how he comes up with his stunts and how he comes up with his choreography and that sort of thing. It's a wonderful... If you haven't seen it, you can find it on YouTube. I'm not saying that you should watch it illegally, but you can if you want to. And it's a tremendous documentary. I highly recommend it. As homework leading up to the Jackie Chan miniseries. But yeah, so that's what we're doing next month. First film TBD, but probably going to be Drunken Master.
Yeah.
So yeah, Vanessa, where can the people find you?
You can find me on @Nesbrit on all forms of social media, and you can also find me on the LRA Network every Thursday at 10:30 Eastern, 7:30 Pacific time. Also, we are now, you can see reruns at other times. I'm warning this now. Also, check out my sketch team, Hail Night Church. We have a Matrix-themed sketch coming up because I'm a big stupid.
Right on.
Oh, have I shown it to you yet?
The Matrix sketch?
Yes.
Yeah. I've seen it.
Hell yeah.
It's awesome.
Hell yeah.
You can find me on Twitter at Hi There Hydar. And that's it. That's my only plug. This will be coming out. I mean, you know, we're both going to be on the Unpops live show here in Los Angeles.
It's
going to be a backyard show on July 6th. I don't know the exact time, but that information is readily available online. And tickets are available online, so pick them up and come and check us out and say hi. And tell us what you think about the show. We'd love to hear from you.
I want
to
hear you.
And as always, thank you so much to our beautiful artists, Jorge Riverall, who does our podcast artwork, and Luke Ventress, who does our podcast theme song. We love you guys. You fucking rule. And thank you guys very much. Please rate, review, subscribe. Hop on iTunes. Give us a 5-star review. Leave us a review, and we'll read it on the podcast. That's a guarantee.
We love you.
We love you guys.
I'm
our
sorry.
Bodies are falling apart. Thank you so much. Bye.
Wait, I'm going to get more high.
Me too. I'm going to go home.